Green Dream, a podcast about ethical investing for positive impact and a better future. Join me, James Baird, as I interview fund managers, advisors, and a range of leaders in sustainability about topical environmental, social, and governance issues. We look forward to joining you on your ethical investment journey. In this interview, I talk to a fellow financial planner, my colleague Karen McLeod. Career-wise, we have a fair bit in common. Like myself, she's an authorised representative of Ethical Investment Advisors, is a member of our investment committee, is accredited by the Responsible Investment Association as a certified financial advisor, is a member and former chair of the Ethical Advisors Co-op, and has made the FS Power 50 list of the 50 most influential financial advisors in Australia. Karen has run her own practice in Brisbane since 2009 and is actively involved in all issues related to ethical investment. In fact, you'll often find her in the media discussing topical and ethical investment issues. In 2010, she was appointed a board member for the Responsible Investment Association, a position which she still holds. She also sits on their certification and governance committees. Karen's also a certified financial planner and holds a Bachelor of Business degree. In this discussion, we try to cut through the jargon and explain how issues like modern slavery, engagement, divestment, stewardship, and greenwashing apply in the real world of ethical investing for clients. We also get an insight into why Karen chose to focus on investing ethically for clients and how she helps clients make greener choices, which are authentic and true to label. I hope you enjoy this discussion. And just to mention a minor technical issue, at about the 13 to 15 minute mark, there's just a little bit of background noise. That's the side effect of working from home in lockdown over there in Brisbane. And fortunately, it doesn't interrupt the conversation too much. We wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land we're recording on, the Wardandi Noongar people. We pay our respects to them and their culture and to elders past, present and future. Karen, thanks so much for your time today. For a lot of advisors, they have a sort of a light bulb moment where choosing to focus on ethical investment and sustainability becomes a clear direction. Would you say you had a light bulb moment?
Hi, James. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. I feel that I definitely did. Perhaps I was young and naive, but I thought that I could make a difference in finance rather than just doing the same as my peers and recommending the same oil or oil stocks, you know, diabetes-inducing Coca-Cola or McDonald's, British American Tobacco stocks. Wondered why those were included in my clients' portfolios. And then when I saw the movie, the Al Gore movie, An Inconvenient Truth, I realized I could actually shift my career and really focus on clean technologies that we're going to need for the future. And my clients would benefit from that. And I would know that I was doing the right thing for planet and for society. So, at that point, I jumped online and started researching how I could get involved and found the Responsible Investment Association for Australasia. And I met some colleagues who became my mentors and haven't looked back.
And so you've been a board member for the Responsible Investment Association for basically a decade. How have you seen the industry change in that time?
Yeah, good question. So I spent 10 years serving just as a volunteer board member for the Responsible Investment Association, Australasia, RIA. And I would say that things have changed dramatically in that time for the better in terms of how super funds, investment managers, asset managers are all working really towards a better future to align finance for society and for planetary needs. So that means we're seeing more than ever before an influx in products and services that really are delivering more transparency, they're delivering more alignment with positive outcomes, and also they're really giving power back to the investor to be able to have their underlying values understood and adhered to whilst also receiving, you know, great returns at the same time. So that's been really eye-opening because at the time when I joined, I suppose ethical investors were seemed to be somewhat on the fringe as part of the Responsible Investment Association. And at that point, everything was more about using environmental, social, and governance factors as a risk management tool rather than listening to your clients' values in terms of making a positive difference. So I think that's really changed in recent times and for the better, really.
There is a certification committee that that RIA has set up, and again, that's been on a little bit of a journey. I know with the Ethical Advisors Co-op that we're a part of, we've got an ethical fund rating system, which is publicly available. But the journey of the certification committee for RIA, has that had to sort of move with the times, would you say?
I think, yes, it's been, well, the Responsible Investment Association does a dual function, which is that it provides itself as an association for all of those involved in responsible finance to get together. But at the same time, it also has a certification or, as you mentioned, a product certification module. So whereby they're sort of certifying their own members. So it's been difficult, I suppose, to encourage, I think, some members to perhaps change their ways or move forward. But in the last few years, particularly the last 5 years, the thing that has actually been, that it has been lifting the bar has been consumer expectation. And also social norms and expectations have dramatically changed, mainly things due to sort of all these groups that are like the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals and other frameworks that have come out. So that's really been quite a strong catalyst for the certification panel to sort of reinvigorate how we can reward investment managers that are really providing the best disclosure and the best stewardship, you know, going beyond the peers in what they do for their investors. So I think that that will be a trend that further accelerates into the future. And certainly with the additional resourcing that the association now has, because, you know, we would meet once every 2 months to certify, you know, maybe 5 products, and now certification panel meets every, every month to certify over 15 products. So the volume of new innovation in the sector, which is great, which is what we need, you know, to reinvigorate finance for good. But that just means that we need to be careful that there's not greenwashing occurring, and that, in fact, product that is coming to market is actually transparent and aligned with what consumers really are expecting from a responsible investment product. So that has been definitely a challenge, because there has been such a volume of demand, yeah.
That term greenwashing is commonly used, and probably stemming from the starting point that, like the rest of the finance industry, we in ethical investment just use so much jargon in our day-to-day that it's hard for the investor to maybe follow exactly what's going on. We say ESG all the time, environmental, social, and governance, and just use these words of responsible investment, ethical investment, sustainable investment interchangeably, but then maybe some of the fund managers will take out certain aspects of those. And this idea of what is a light green or mid or dark or deep green fund, maybe to us makes perfect sense, but to the investor is a bit harder to get your head around. So how do you see this greenwashing discussion sort of evolving?
I think that we're sort of on our way to developing our own sort of taxonomy and framework to sort of more easily categorize different types of investments that clients are accessing. So the way the EU's gone in sort of developing that systemized classification approach, I think will provide the transparency that investors need and prevent the greenwashing to help investors make greener choices. So sort of that's well on its way there. And so I think we'll just adopt similar here, and that will make it a lot easier for Australian investors to know that what they're getting is authentic and true to label.
Could I simplify it by saying negative screening knocks out the common things that you'd expect, alcohol, gambling, tobacco, et cetera, and maybe more and more fossil fuels. And then positive screening is a method of trying to explain that the positive impact that you're having. And so maybe does separate certain funds from maybe ones that are doing a tick the box approach of, hey, we've excluded certain stocks, we're an ethical fund.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that all that a pure negative screen will almost disappear in that that's simply insufficient for the majority of investors going forward. Like, we've already decided that, you know, social norms sort of have dictated that we're really not prepared. Now it's, you know, we've got Modern Slavery Act here, and in the EU, as like in the UK as well, I should say. So there's many things that are sort of being removed as investment options anyway. But you're right, all those classifications make sense to us. For an actual investor, though, you're right, they don't come in and say, I'd like a negative screen with impact or something. They don't come in and use that language. They just come in and talk about sectors they wish to, you know, potentially support, and others that they'd prefer to exclude, or and then also how they can really, you know, make a positive difference with the money that they have and do more good than harm. So I think the labels will help us as their advisors, and it will give them some certainty for self-advised investors. But ultimately, it comes down to looking at the underlying holdings, and that's sort of where, you know, our specialisation fits in that regard, to, as a gatekeeper for clients' monies, and keeping funds accountable as well, ongoing, if certain companies or investments are acquired by a fund that don't meet, you know, what we'd expect.
So you mentioned modern slavery there. I mean, the word slavery conjures up some pretty full-on imagery for most people of maybe colonialism and past history. But we've been talking about it quite a bit with investments in our portfolios through this issue of forced labor in China, and particularly in areas like cotton, clothing manufacturers, solar panel production, and so on. So would you say we can rely on fund managers to ensure that their supply chains of companies invested in are 100% squeaky clean, or what sort of oversight's needed there?
Well, you can't. Obviously, like, you've just proven that you can't rely on that. And in some cases, it's, you know, misinformation or disinformation. They don't have the information. So, and sometimes there's often, you know, cover up in how certain things are procured and supplied. But I think the point is that never before have we been required, in terms of Australian companies that are large companies, to have such such an active role in ensuring that we are not procuring from anything that could be involved in modern slavery. So it's becoming very thorough. And, you know, it will continue to improve, but it's just really the start at the moment of that particular phase. And I think the fund managers, obviously, if they're doing what they say they should be doing, you know, they're going to be relying on independent research. They'll be relying on the companies themselves to do their own research, and then also potentially relying on investors, like ethical investors, to also provide them with insights that they may not know about.
So you're basically saying inadvertently fund managers may be investing in companies which are involved in modern slavery, and as an industry, we just need to help them ensure that that's not happening. I mean, is that a link to this idea of stewardship? I mean, stewardship's another word that gets thrown around a bit. Is that what stewardship means to you?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, you know, our job as custodians of our clients' monies is really to ensure that, you know, capital is preserved and we grow those assets for them in a way that aligns with their values. And in order to do that, we need to take an active interest as their custodian in what they're owning. So, yes, of course, we need to look into all aspects of how that business essentially makes a profit, and that includes modern slavery.
Some fund managers will say that they invest in companies that maybe don't have the best ESG practices in place, but they're engaging with them. So they're communicating with them to lift their game. Is engagement necessary if you're investing in highly rated ESG companies?
Look, I think engagement's always going to be part of the puzzle, because whether we like it or not, some fund managers will be in And it depends on obviously what the client's seeking, but they will be in potentially large companies that are transitioning to a more sustainable and responsible business practice. So in that journey, they're going to be needing to engage with them to give them suggestions on how to do that in the most appropriate manner. And that of course, will rely on the fund manager to do that. We don't see as much requirement to do as much engagement because we obviously have fund managers that are already actively engaging and active stewards. So that's and also very open and they're very cooperative in pursuing, you know, certain topics if there's a concern. It's going to depend on the portfolio and also what the client's tolerance is to potentially, you know, potential conflicts that could arise due to environmental, social, governance issues if engagement is required.
So, for example, you probably wouldn't engage with a coal miner to stop mining coal, but it probably begs the question about engaging on the indirect fossil fuel exposure side of things. So we have this discussion quite a bit that what is indirect fossil fuel exposure, and you know, certainly with financing of fossil fuel projects, is that an area that's worth engaging in, or is it a case of investors basically want divestment of anything to do with indirect fossil fuels?
Depends on the client. Some clients are not willing to spend the time to engage and rather allocate funds elsewhere. And some clients would prefer to engage and retain holdings. So it really does depend on the individual that you're representing and the approach they wish to take and also their allocation to that sector. So it might be a small allocation, but they'd like to hold it so they can engage as active in terms of an activism, I suppose, point of view. And often clients do hold small holdings in coal mining companies, specifically so that they can vote in certain ways. So there's a range of techniques clients can participate in depending on what they feel comfortable with. And a good advisor should be able to explain those to them.
What about this area of impact investing? So more and more we're hearing about positive impact being talked about across various ethical funds. But there is a subset of the industry that calls itself impact investing, and that can even include venture capital as well. How do clients sort of access those investments?
So there are some impact investing funds that run focused on Australian equities, listed Australian equities, or listed international equities, or they might be in the infrastructure space or other alternative space, as you've touched on, or they might be in areas such as social housing or disability accommodation. So there's a range of asset classes that they can cover, and also private equity, as you mentioned. So it just depends what the client is seeking in terms of an allocation. But impact investing for the clients that I look after, so they're looking at a little bit like their cake and eat it too, I always describe it as. So they want a meaningful return for the impact investments that we're going into. So nothing that's a charity per se. They just want that additionality. They want additional impact. So that means, you know, they want metrics around what they're delivering in terms of microfinance loans that have been made, or tons of water that's been recycled, megawatt hours of energy generated from renewable sources, cars taken off the road, whatever it might be. That's how our clients are accessing impact at this moment. And hopefully that sector will grow, because that sector is providing, you know, making a difference in a sustainable way with that additionality.
And the green bond sector is one that's just been sort of expanding rapidly on a global scale. You mentioned affordable housing there, so you can access affordable housing bonds. Green bonds in the environmental sense have been around for some time, funding renewables and so on, but now social bonds seem to be a growing area. So is that sort of giving us a bit of a wider range of green bonds to choose from?
I think so. You know, clients always feel interested that there's so much happening in the bond space, especially because it is such a diverse market compared to the equities market, and they can get access to such good quality credit, whether it be from local governments, state governments, both domestically and also federal government. So like the French Green Bond or the Queensland Treasury green bond. So there can be a range of issuers and very good quality issuers. And then the projects themselves that you're funding, as you mentioned, can be a mix of either environmental, social, or both within that bond, along obviously with a competitive financial return. So I think going forward, in order for us to sort of meet targets, we know that there's going to be a lot more innovation in this sector, just really to finance the transition we need to a low carbon future. There will be more issues.
Talking about diversification across asset classes, I guess this idea about investors wanting to be parochial and support Australian innovation and technology, and particularly in renewables, we often have this conversation about international shares and the sort of opportunities that are available there. So how do you see that domestic versus international argument about investing in renewables, batteries, even telecoms, robotics, etc.? How do investors do that?
Good question. Look, I would say that probably for the last 5 years, things have been a bit quiet on the domestic front in terms of the listed space. And probably the most exciting opportunities have more so been in the international space. But of late, we are seeing a lot more innovation coming through in the domestic side, which is good. So investors can start accessing those opportunities, because traditionally our ASX is really weighted towards large financials and resources stocks, and telcos, as you mentioned. So for clients that really want to get a hold of different sectors, like you mentioned before, such as renewables or technology or healthcare, they've had to really go offshore. But there are a lot more sort of starting in that small to medium-sized company space, which is obviously where we specialise. And we have seen a lot more innovation, really good quality companies coming through, which is exciting. And I guess the other exciting thing, which I believe will be a massive transformation for the domestic economy, is that there's a lot more thought being put into, I think, the millennials that are starting some of these, acquiring seed capital, private equity startups, are really thinking about delivering businesses that not only making attractive profits, but delivering those environmental, social, and governance benefits as well when they're starting a business. So when they hopefully list on the ASX, you know, there'll be a lot more opportunities there as well for ethical investors to participate in really attractive businesses.
So what does turning down the noise mean to you in terms of, you know, there's always going to be headlines about markets, what's going on, but yet a lot of our clients' timeframes are long-term. So do we need to be watching the market daily, or is that just noise?
Well, it's interesting times at the moment. So I think that thematically, ethical investors are comfortable with, you know, the themes that we've chosen for the future. You know, so we've got an aging population, focus on healthcare and technology, and also doing good for the planet in solving these issues so that we can be, you know, sustainable on a heating planet per se. Okay. And so we're focused on other issues like food security and water security. So these are issues that no matter what markets are doing, we are going to need, okay, as a civilization to continue surviving under the current circumstances. So clients are happy with those thematics. But you're right. Sometimes there is a lot of noise in the media. That's what the media is there for, to create that noise. So in most cases for clients, it's just, you're right, thinking about what their time frame is for investment, going back to that time frame, and also assessing what their appetite for risk is, which has been the case, you know, since day dot. And if clients are comfortable with that, putting the portfolio together and then executing it in accordance with that time frame is really important, and staying the distance and checking in with your advisor to make sure you still feel comfortable and you can sleep at night. So that the long-term benefits of holding these assets can really be brought to fruition.
Final question. You run your own business. You're on a number of boards and committees. Mm-hmm. You've got a family.
Yep.
Do you actually have any spare time? And if so, what do you do in your spare time?
Very good question, James. I do. I love to wake up early and go for a run most mornings, or to Pilates, and that is my time. And my special time is to go on trails. So I love discovering new trails and just getting out in nature and just really having that time to remember why I do what I do, So you might be taking a photo of a beautiful blossom like I did this morning that was growing as spring is emerging here in Brisbane, or it might be seeing a beautiful kookaburra, whatever it might be, just having that time every day to be outside with a friend or by myself provides the mindfulness I think we all need to continue the work that we do. So that's really important to me, and I unfortunately will not be running my trail event in the coming weeks, but there'll always be another event to run. That's my personal love outside of work.
So important to have that quiet time, and luckily living in Queensland, you've got the perfect climate to be out and about doing it when you're not locked down, that is.
Yes.
Karen, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate the comments.
Pleasure. Thank you for inviting me, James, and good luck with your podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Green Dream podcast. For information on the ways that we can help you on your ethical investment journey, visit www.justinvest.net.au. Please keep in mind that the information contained in this podcast is of a general nature and does not take into account your personal circumstances. Past performance is not a reliable indicator of future results. You should consider obtaining personalised professional advice from a licensed financial planner before implementing any significant financial decisions. In the spirit of reconciliation, the Green Dream acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.